It's tuned to yesterday's showcasing programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Welcome to this hour of science fiction. Later on, we enjoy the story Student Body on X-1. But right now, it's Exploring Tomorrow with The Trouble with Robots, hosted by famed science fiction editor John Campbell Jr. This episode first heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on May 28, 1958.
The problem of dealing with robots is a rather peculiar thing. You know, when you deal with another human being, you can say, well, you know what I mean. And he can say, yeah, I see what you mean. When you're dealing with a robot, though, you have a different situation. If you say, you know what I mean, the robot says,
No. Tell me.
The trouble with the robot is that it will always do exactly what you tell it, whether it makes sense or not. It has no judgment whatever. For instance, an automobile is a robot. You tell it to drive straight ahead. It drives straight ahead, right into the concrete bridge abutment. It doesn't have any sense. Another thing, if we say home is the hunter, to a man this makes sense. We think of the poem as a quotation. What would such a phrase mean to a robot?
Report from James Martin, Special Agent to the Director of the United Nations Intelligence Service, February 19, 1993. Dear Chief, I hope you had a happy St. Valentine's Day. I wish I could say the same for myself. The way it looks now, the only Valentine I'll get will be one with my epitaph on it. I hope this report reaches you eventually. You may never get it, or if you do, I may be dead by then. Maybe it was a good idea to take this section of Europe and reform the country of Transylvania again, but right now I'm inclined to doubt it. Since Transylvania became a new country, there have been queer things going on here. As to your instructions, I got an appointment to see Baron Deklitz, the Prime Minister. When the appointment came through, I was met at the front door of my hotel by Colonel Bronlich, the head of the Transylvanian secret police.
Ah, Mr. Martin. I was instructed to escort you to Castle Deklitz. You have an appointment with the Baron, I believe.
Yes, that's right. And you are...
I am Colonel Bronlich at your service, Mr. Martin. Come. This is our limousine here at the curb.
Well, this is very kind of you, Colonel.
Kind? Not at all. It is my duty. You are an agent of the United Nations. It is therefore my duty to escort you about, especially when you are going to call on our Prime Minister, Baron Deklitz.
I see. I suppose we'll have to wait for your chauffeur.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Martin. This is a robot-operated automobile. Observe. I merely press this button.
Yes, Colonel Bronlich.
Drive us to the Castle Deklitz.
Yes, sir.
Well, Mr. Martin, do we not have all the modern conveniences here in Transylvania?
Oh, yes, yes, very modern. You'll have telephones next. We have robot-operated machines in my country, too, Colonel, but I must admit that none of them are capable of talking as this one does.
You find that unusual?
Well, yes. A robot brain capable of conversation would be too large to fit in this automobile.
The brain is not in this car, Mr. Martin. This vehicle is guided by remote control. The actual brain of the robot is in an underground chamber beneath the Castle Deklitz.
Oh?
Yes. The Baron's castle may look on the outside as though it were 1,000 years old, but the equipment within is quite modern.
Well, I have to admit that it's pretty convenient to have robot-operated remote control transportation.
All of the Baron's transportation works this way. His cars, his aircraft, his boats, everything.
Hmm. Sounds as though Baron Deklitz runs the whole country by remote control. With a robot like that around, it's a wonder he needs any human helpers.
Mr. Martin, I will thank you not to criticize the government of Transylvania.
Sorry, I didn't mean to offend. After all, I am supposed to be a diplomat.
You might try harder, Mr. Martin.
Why is the car slowing down, Colonel?
Do you see the portcullis? That heavy steel grate that closes the entrance? That, too, is controlled by the robot brain.
The Baron certainly seems to be well guarded.
Very well guarded, indeed, Mr. Martin. It is difficult for anyone to get into Castle Deklitz. It is even more difficult to get out.
United Nations agent Jim Martin had managed to get an appointment to see Baron Deklitz, prime minister of the newly formed country of Transylvania. But now that he had gotten inside the Baron's castle, he was beginning to see what was wrong with the new country, because the castle itself was nothing more nor less than a huge robot. He had managed to get inside a robot.
That castle was a real nightmare. There were hidden television cameras everywhere, and they all relayed everything they saw to that big brain in the cellar. No matter where a man might go in that castle, he was never out of the sight of those robotic eyes. Colonel Bronwick escorted me into a big, comfortable, ultra-modern room, told me to help myself to the sherry, and left me to wait for Baron Deklitz. I went over to the bar. But there were no glasses there, no bottle of sherry. I thought that maybe the colonel was having a little joke, when suddenly a voice came from a wall speaker.
What would you like to drink, sir?
Oh, a glass of sherry.
Yes, sir. Your sherry, sir.
A panel slid open in the wall and a glass of sherry came out.
Sit down. How may I help you?
Good evening, Your Excellency. May I present my identification?
No, stop. Before you put your hand in your pocket, Mr. Martin, let me warn you not to try to draw a gun. I assure you that if you tried it, you would be detected by my robot and you would be shot down where you stand long before you could aim your own gun. A robot can think and act much faster than a human being can, Mr. Martin.
Well, I didn't come here to kill you, Baron. I'm not an assassin. I'm here on United Nations business.
Yes, I am aware of that. I merely wanted to warn you. And now, please, your identification.
Yes, here it is, sir.
Thank you. Yes, that seems to be in order. Now, what business does the United Nations have with the Prime Minister of Transylvania?
Well, I'll be frank with you, Baron. There's something wrong here in Transylvania. The UN doesn't interfere with the internal government of its members unless the government is violating the basic rights of its citizens. Now, frankly, sir, Transylvania is doing just that.
You impudent young swine! Transylvania is a scientifically run country. It is run by mathematically logical principles. All decisions of the government are analyzed carefully by robotic computers.
Well, yes, but...
You think I make the policy for the country? No! All policy decisions are made by the robots so that they can be scientifically accurate.
What happened? The lights went out.
The power has been cut off. Someone... Oh, Martin, you shot me. You cut off the power so my robot could not operate.
Baron!
I will get you, Martin.
When the lights came on again a second or two later, the Baron was sprawled on the floor. I looked around the room, but I couldn't see anyone. I hadn't shot the Baron. I didn't even carry a gun. Whoever had killed him made a clean getaway so far. I knew I had to get out of there, too. Just before the power went off, I'd been arguing with the Baron. When the robot came to, it would shoot me down with the hidden automatic guns in the walls. I had to get out of the castle Deklitz. When I got outside, I saw that the steel gate in the side wall of the castle was open. Nearby was the car that had brought us in. The keys were in the ignition. I got inside fast. I gunned the car toward the gate. Just as I came near, the gate began to close. And just as I went through the gate, it slammed shut. I breathed easier after that. At least I'd managed to get out of the castle Deklitz. But I'd forgotten one thing. When the car started to slow up, I pushed down harder on the accelerator. But it didn't help. Hey, what's going on? The car's turning around. I can't control it. It's taking me back to the castle.
Thank you.
machine, no matter how complex and intelligent it may appear, is still a machine. The trouble with a machine is that once it's set to do a particular job, it doesn't do any good to argue with it. The only way to stop it is to shut it off or wreck it. Jim Martin was in no position to do either. It was kind of like being in an automatic elevator with the controls stuck. It was going where it was going, and there wasn't anything to do about it.
I knew I'd have to get out of that car. It wasn't going very fast yet, so I decided to jump before it got up too much speed. I rolled across the road. It shook me up a little to jump out of a moving car, but I wasn't hurt. I got up, brushed off the dirt, and started down the road towards the city. I was about 5 miles away through the thick forest and about 6 miles by road. I decided to follow the road. I didn't want to get lost. I'd been walking about 10 minutes when I heard a noise. It was a helicopter coming from the direction of the castle. I got off the road fast and hid under a tree. It was dark, and even with the moon shining, it would have been hard for a human being to spot me from the air. The television eyes of that helicopter were sharper than human eyes. The robot saw me.
You must come back to the castle, sir.
Not me, Buster.
The helicopter will land. You will get in.
The moon lit up the helicopter pretty well. I could see the snouts of the mounted machine guns pointing at me, but I didn't care. I figured that going back to the castle would be certain death anyway. I jumped behind the tree and then dived under a nearby bush and started crawling.
Where are you? You must come back.
I just lay flat and kept quiet. And then I heard another sound on the road. There was a car coming.
Robot, this is Colonel Brownlick. I noticed the helicopter hovering, so I came immediately. Is the murderer Martin nearby?
Yes. He is somewhere in the woods to your right.
Excellent. I have a squad of men here. We will capture him.
Yes. He must go back to the castle.
All right, men. Spread out. Cover the whole area. He must be somewhere close by. Run on the searchlight.
I knew they'd spot me soon. There was a spotlight moving near me. I decided that my only chance was to run for it. If I stayed where I was, I'd die. Here goes.
There he is! Stop him! Put him down!
It was the craziest gun battle I'd ever seen. Before the soldiers could shoot me, the helicopter's weapons had gunned them down. And while it was doing that, Colonel Bronwick had climbed back into his armored car and shot down the helicopter with the turret gun. By the time the whole thing was over, I was well hidden in the underbrush. Pretty soon I heard the armored car drive away. But I just stayed where I was. It didn't make sense. Why had the robot's helicopter shot down the soldiers? Whose side was the robot on, anyway? I decided that since everything was quiet now, I'd better get moving. I wanted to get to the city by dawn. So I crawled out from my hiding place and headed for the road again. I didn't get far.
Put up your hands, Mr. Martin.
What? Colonel Bronwick. I didn't see you behind that tree. I thought you'd driven off in the armored car.
Oh, no. As soon as I shot down the helicopter, the robot brain took control of the car. I jumped out.
I suppose you're going to shoot me like you shot the Baron?
Of course. The robot is convinced that you killed the Baron. And so will the people of Transylvania be convinced. And I will proclaim myself the new Prime Minister.
No wonder this country's in trouble. The Baron was a crackpot, and so are you. What? Well, looks like the robot has another helicopter to operate.
Good. The robot can kill you and save me the trouble.
Well, I don't think so. Have you figured out why the other helicopter shot down your men instead of shooting down me?
An accident. The robot could not see well in the dark. Perhaps I should not have shot it down, but it was obviously faulty.
Oh, you're not thinking straight tonight, Colonel.
You must get in the helicopter, Mr. Martin. You must go back to the castle.
Oh, well, I'm afraid I can't do that. If I move, the Colonel will shoot me.
That cannot be permitted.
No!
Well, thanks, Robert, old boy. That's the end of the man who shot the Baron.
That does not concern me. My orders are to bring you back alive. Get in the helicopter.
Anything you say, pal. Let's go.
The helicopter took me back to the castle decklet. When it landed in the courtyard, the robot had more orders for me.
Go into the main room. The Baron wants you.
I walked back to the room where the Baron had been shot. My hunch had been right. The Baron, stubborn old cuss, had refused to believe that he was dying. He wanted to teach me a lesson. So he'd given the robot orders to bring me back alive. Alive. So that meant that if anyone threatened my life, the robot would have to stop them. And it used its automatic machine guns to do it. It didn't matter to the robot that the Baron was dead. As long as the Baron's hand was on that control button, the robot had to obey its orders. It had hunted me down and brought me back. I walked over to the control panel and talked into the microphone. Robert, you will obey my orders now.
Yes, sir.
Very well. As soon as I leave here, you will cease operation. You will turn yourself off. You will never operate again. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now I'm going to go out and take one of the Baron's cars. He won't need it. Winds up the report, Chief. I hope I'll be able to deliver it to you. I'm in my hotel room right now, but there's rioting in the streets outside. Transylvania has been turned upside down. Nobody knows who killed their Prime Minister, Baron Decklet, nor do they know who machine-gunned Colonel Bronwick. But the worst trouble is with the robot. You see, the Baron had the idea he could run the whole country with a robot. It was supposed to be a scientific form of government. That robot ran almost everything in the whole area. It controlled the power plants, the telephones, transportation, even the garbage disposal. And ever since it shut itself off, nothing has worked in the whole country. As a result, Transylvania has no government and no organization. The idea of running a government by machine was a failure.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday from May 28, 1958 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. You're listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. And now the first of two stories submitted to the X-1 series by author F.L. Wallace, this called Student Body. Featuring Bob Hastings, James Stevens, and James Dukas, this episode first heard on NBC on July 31st, 1956.
In just a moment, X-1, but first... Now there's a melody you'll recognize, opus number one in the inimitable Dorsey style. And there'll be lots more of your favorite tunes, old and new, on NBC Bandstand all this week. The Dorsey brothers will appear in person, and you'll also enjoy some of the sweetest music this side of heaven by Guy Lombardo and the Royal Canadian. Wayne King and Freddie Martin come along, too, together with bright personalities like Bert Fox and Johnny Mercer. It's wonderful live music weekday mornings with NBC Bandstand. And now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC. Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of a future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-X-
Tonight, Student Body by F.L. Wallace. Our story in 1 minute.
Girl.
Boy.
Moon.
June.
Ring.
Wedding.
Home.
Money.
Baby.
Money.
Education.
Money.
Retirement.
Money.
Solution.
United States Savings Bonds. There's a smart couple. They're looking to the future. They know how important it is to plan for the future now with savings bonds.
Yes, the plans you make today will determine what kind of tomorrow you have. Are you a student? Are you a young married couple? Are you approaching the golden years? Whatever your age, whatever your situation, savings bonds can be a big help in making your tomorrow secure and happy.
Plan wisely. Buy savings bonds regularly where you work or where you bank. They're a good investment. You're saving your money and you're earning more. Series E bonds pay 3% interest compounded twice a year when the bonds are held to maturity.
And savings bonds are as safe and sound as America itself. What's more, they're protected against loss or theft.
For the big things in your life, be ready with United States Savings Bonds. And now, Student Body by F.L. Wallace.
Emergency report to Central Colonial Service, subject Planet 7G63, Glade, reporting Dano Marin, special assignment from Biological Control. Report consisting of standard universal tapes and special recorded comment. First segment, landing day plus one, 6 a.m. sidereal mean time. Voices on tape, myself, Colonial Executive Shep Hafner, and Athiel, a female member of our crew. Tape commencing.
Watch your step on the ramp, Marin. It's tilted.
Oh, yes, I will. All right, well, where are these people?
Over there, a few hundred feet, beneath that tree.
Well, come on, then.
You know, I'm going to have to note on the log that you cleared the planet for colonization as of last night.
I understand. I'm taping this now for my records. I take full responsibility for the safety of this planet.
All right, but wait until you see this. Here we are. Now, do you see there? In the clearing beneath that tree?
Why, good Lord, they haven't a stitch of clothes on. None of them.
That's just what I told you.
Are they all right? No,
they're just asleep. You can see them breathing.
Look here, Hatner. Who gave them permission to sleep out here in the open?
Shh, don't wake them yet. I gave them permission, Marin. They've been cooped up in that ship for over 6 months. They wanted to sleep outside. And in view of your clearance, I couldn't see any reason to refuse permission.
I know. You were within your rights. But the clothing, why, they don't even have blankets.
They did have, when they bedded down last night. Some of them even used the standard-issue sleeping bag.
Well, then what happened to them? There are 13 people sleeping around that tree, and they're stark naked, all of them.
Last night you told me there was nothing dangerous on Glade. Do you still think so?
I know so. I have a complete biological survey.
Does your survey account for anything like this?
You know it doesn't.
That's what I thought. Okay. Now you've seen it for yourself. Let's wake them up and get them back to the ship.
No, wait. You better wake them one at a time. This will be embarrassing enough for them as it is.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Now we'll wake the nearest one first. That's Athiel, our lab technician.
Yes, well, here, take my jacket. Cover her with it before you wake her.
All right. Wake up, Athiel.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Athiel, wake up. It's Executive Hafner.
What? Oh, what is it?
I'm sorry, Athiel. Something has happened.
Oh, my clothes. My blanket, everything's gone.
Now, be careful. Don't wake the others.
Yes, the others. Why, good heavens, they're all that
way. Athiel, just go back to your cabin on the ship. Everything is all right. We'll explain it to you when we have the others safely back.
Well, I feel so foolish. How could this happen? What's the meaning of it?
Now, just get back to the ship. Your clothes back there are perfectly safe.
Yes, it's all right. Well, thank you.
You told her we'd explain it later, Hafner. Do you think we can?
That's your job, isn't it?
This planet is as new to me as it is to you.
You're the biologist. What destroyed their clothing?
It would have to be something that could destroy both blankets and clothing without waking the people.
Nocturnal insects?
Ordinarily, I'd say that was a distinct possibility if it weren't for the fact that our surveys show no evidence whatsoever of any such insects on Glade.
Your survey could have missed them, couldn't it?
Not if they existed in any great quantity. Besides, if insects were the answer, there should be some kind of evidence of them right here in the area where Athel was lying. Certainly one or two of them would be crushed when she rolled over in her sleep.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
Now, look for yourself. There's absolutely no sign of anything at all here.
Well, what about some chemical, some vapor oozing from the ground?
No chance at all. I'd rule that out completely.
Then what?
Well, there's the tree itself. I suppose it could exude some sort of a chemical that might dissolve cloth, but I can check that in the lab.
Now, we'd better arouse the rest of these people and get them back to the ship.
Wait.
What? What is it?
Why, it's some kind of an animal.
Hmm?
Just caught a glimpse through there. Ah, there he is. Yeah, you see behind that bush?
Yeah. Looks almost like a chipmunk.
Yes, and he's feeding on something. Why, it looks like a piece of cloth.
Marin, do you think...
Shh, he doesn't hear us. I'll just ease up to him now. Closer. Now...
You got him.
Oh, what hit you, you little devil.
Watch out, Marin. He's got sharp teeth.
You're telling me. Easy there, boy. Easy. Like to have your head stroked? Sure you do. That's a boy.
He's calming down.
Yes, look at that. Well, he's nestling in the crook of my arm, almost like a kitten.
Almost. Marin, I hope you don't mind short sleeves.
Now, what do you mean?
He's already eaten half the sleeve off your shirt. I think we've found the answer to our problem.
The animal was a small, furry mammal resembling an Earth-type rodent. Its overall length is 14 centimeters, weight 512 grams. Fur stringy and sparse, color a light beige, indicating no particular protective coloring. The animal was placed in a special cage in a biological laboratory aboard ship for further study. Next tape, landing date plus 2.
Can we exterminate it?
Oh, that's quite a job.
How about locally?
Hardly. It's ecologically basic.
Look, Marin, you're from biological control. I've just got an executive's rating.
Well, look, you know how control works. They send a survey ship over and record the neural currents of the animals. They get everything that has a brain, including insects, and they take a few specimens to check the patterns. Now, here's the report on Glade. The survey shows that this animal is one of only 4 species of mammals on the planet. It is also the most numerous.
So if we kill them off here, others will swarm in from other areas.
Yes, that's about it. Probably millions of them around this planet. Of course, if you want to put a barrier across the connection to the mainland, you might be able to wipe them out locally.
Look, Marin, I've got a tight schedule. I can't spare dirt-moving equipment for that. By the way, what do they eat?
Well, as far as I can see, anything. Insects, fruit, berries. You could call it an omnivore. Now that our clothing is handy, it eats that, too.
I thought our clothing was supposed to be vermin-proof.
It is on 27 planets. On the 28th, we met up with a little fella that has better digestive fluids, that's all. He's eating a leather belt right now.
Yeah. Are they likely to bother the crops we plant?
They shouldn't, but then I would have said the same thing about our clothing.
All right, Marin, you worry about the crops. Find some way to keep them out of the field. Meanwhile, everyone sleeps inside the ship until we can build dormitories.
Biological examination of omnivora posed this question. Why only 4 species of mammals on Glade? No reptiles and only a few birds. On all comparable planets, a large variety of species. Nearest Earth parallel, fossil remains from the late Carboniferous show creatures like the omnivora, but on Glade there appears to be no further evolution. Next tape segment, L plus 22, place, temporary warehouse, Quartermaster Crone, and myself.
There you are, Mr. Marin. They've got in every seat, sack, and barrel in this part of the warehouse.
Well, what makes you think it's mice?
Look, I've worked in grain elevators for 30 years in Kansas. Look at the way that sack is gnawed. And look over there. Droppings.
Well, it's not exactly...
I know. So they're mice-like. I want to know how to get rid of them.
Have you tried poison?
You tell me what poison to use, and I'll use it. They got into a 100-pound sack of arsenic and went through it like it was whipped cream.
Well, how did they get in? It's a fused dirt floor, isn't it?
It should be pest tight. But see? There are cracks along here. They must have burrowed through. They were loose in here, and we don't have time to build another warehouse. They've got to be controlled here.
Well, catch me a few of them alive, and I'll see what I can do.
Next morning, a dozen live specimens of mice-like mammals were delivered to the lab. No two of them were affected by the same poison, and the poison developed to control the omnivora was completely ineffective. Alternate plan discussed with Executive Hafner and Machinist Tully of Computer Engineering. Next tape, L plus 24. Hafner, Tully, and myself.
I tried it out yesterday, Mr. Hafner. I think I've got all the bugs licked now.
Tully, I don't want any more metal used than is necessary. This isn't standard authorized equipment.
You're not dealing with a standard authorized problem.
Are you ready to activate the device?
Sure thing. Here, help me get it down from this assembly bench down on the floor.
All right.
There you go, kitty. Now, what do you think of her? A robot cat.
Well, I still think we need at least three of them.
Mr. Marin, inventory on colonial expeditions is always short. One will have to do. All right, Tully. Show us how this mechanical mouse catcher operates.
You better get out of the way, Mr. Marin. If you've touched any of the mice in the lab, she'll go for you. She reacts to smell as well as sight and sound.
All right, Tully, start it up.
All right, kitty, go ahead and have a good time.
She moves like a cat.
You know, I wouldn't bet a plug nickel on any mouse in the same warehouse with that baby.
Robot cat device proved relatively successful in Warehouse 1. Rodent damage held below danger margin. Next tape, L plus 37. Tully, Hafner, and myself.
I can't salvage it, Mr. Hafner. Just look at that. That skeleton was chrome steel, now it's bent. The skin was duroplastic, and now it's cut to ribbons. The computer parts are all smashed to bits.
How do you account for it, Tully?
Well, look around the poor thing. You had me build it for mice. These things weren't mice. They're a good foot long. They just outnumbered him, that's all.
You examined these dead animals, Marin?
Not closely.
Well, you'll find your mice have grown. They ganged up on that cat.
There aren't supposed to be any rats on Glade, are there?
Well, there weren't supposed to be any mice either. What are you going to do?
We'll have to build another warehouse. 2-foot-thick fused floors.
Wait a minute, Mr. Hafner. To do that, we'll have to stop all our construction. The atomic generator...
Why not build more robot cats?
You weren't here when we opened the doors, Marin. The warehouse was swarming with rats. Tully, how many robot cats would we need? 5, 15.
We don't have enough parts to build more than 3.
If we need more than that, we'll have to rob the computer and the spaceship. And that's one thing I refuse to do. The spaceship is our only link with Earth until the next wave in 2 years. All right, then I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll floodlight the supplies at night. We'll post a guard with half-charged rifles until we can move to the new warehouse. That'll take about 10 days. Meanwhile, our fast crops are ripening. It's my guess that the rats will turn to that for food. Now, in order to protect our future food supplies, you'll have to activate your cold storage animals,
Mr.
Marin.
Mr. Hafner, it's against regulations to release any cold storage animals on a planet until after a complete investigation.
That takes 10 to 20 years. This is an emergency.
I don't want to be responsible for another rabbit-infested Australia or that planet in the Centauri system that the snails took over.
Marin, I'll take the responsibility. You're recording now, aren't you?
Yes.
All right. If that isn't authorization enough, I'll put it in writing.
Well, the beast I've got for this job won't be any good against rats this size.
You've got hormones. Use them.
Dead rats were gathered and frozen for further study. Observed animals, a wide variation in size. Internally, a lack of uniformity in organs. Some specimens had huge fangs and delicate jaws. Others had tiny teeth and massive bone structure. obviously the most scrambled species ever encountered by a biologist. Reproductive cells were especially battling, proceeding with hormone treatment on cold storage Earth animals. Next tape, L plus 39. Lab technician, Athiel, and myself.
First one is coming out of it, Mr. Marin.
Yes, it makes 85% viability. That's not bad. All right, fella, now take it easy, take it easy.
Oh, he's a cute little fella.
But he's tough. That's a wire-haired terrier. They're small, but they've been used for ratters since the Middle Ages.
You think he's nearly ready for the hormone course?
I think so. All right, first pituitary injection.
Ready. All right, now, this is going to hurt just a little, fella.
Oh, yeah, it's a dirty trick, isn't it, jabbing you with a needle when you're fresh out of the deep freeze? But don't you worry, fella, you'll be glad you had it. You'll stand a better chance against those rats when we work you up to about a Great Dane size.
L plus 50, artificially enlarged terriers loosed in the fields of the fast crops. Following tape, field observation of terriers. Executor Hafner and myself.
How long have they been at it, Marin?
Since daybreak. I have to bring the dogs in at night and shoot them full of antibiotics.
Will the dogs last?
Well, this crop will be harvested in about a week. We'll make that. And there'll be 2 weeks to rest up before the next fast crop shows above ground. I think we've got the rats licked for a while.
Well, when you get a chance, you might ask some of those PhDs in Central how they happened to hand us a survey and forgot to give us a few details like mice and rats.
I have been checking on that, Mr. Hafner. I don't think there's any doubt. When that survey was made before we landed, there weren't any mice and rats on Glade.
Then where did they come from? How did they get here?
I don't know. But we're going to have to find out.
Research project on pseudomites and pseudo-rats interrupted by field trip with Biological Survey Officer Whitehead. Tape L plus 63 in field geological survey vehicle. Whitehead and myself.
You think you got trouble? Can you read a sonar map?
No.
Here, look. See this scope? It reads straight down about 10 miles. I'm supposed to be out looking for oil shale, but I got kind of interested in this. Look. First few feet down, you can find fossils. After the first few feet, that's about 20,000 years, there are no fossils until you get way down here. That's about the same as late Carboniferous on Earth. Then you get the fossils again. It doesn't figure.
But isn't that usual, changes in geological eras?
You don't get it, man. I'm not talking about eras, I'm talking about years. Straight down from here, 20,000 years ago, this was a desert. And then 3 years later, it was a jungle. 5 years after that, there was a glacier. Earth normal would be 50,000 years or more for a change like that.
And what caused it?
Hey, you've got me. Fluctuations in the sun? Three. Fluctuations in the sun? I don't know, but talk about changeable weather. This planet really has it.
Based on accumulated data, theory developed regarding mammalian life on planet Glade. Tape L plus 65. Place temporary headquarters of Executive Hafner.
Marin, I've got a lot of work to clear up this morning.
I thought you might like to know where the mice came from.
They don't bother us anymore.
I have also determined the origin of the rats.
They're under control.
I wonder if they are, Mr. Hafner.
What do you mean?
Mr. Hafner, I checked this with Whitehead. Between 100 million years and 20,000 years ago, this planet was changing violently and quickly. The first change wiped out the dinosaur just the way it did on Earth. But it kept on changing. Desert, glacier, jungle. And all this within the lifespan of a single animal. For 1 million years, this was the norm of existence on Glade.
I've checked geological survey. The planet is stable now.
Well, that's not what I'm getting at. The point is, survival was difficult. Only one species of mammals managed to come through.
Now, wait a minute, Marin. There are four species, ranging in size from a squirrel to a water buffalo.
One species. They're the same. If the food supply for the largest animal increases, some of the smaller so-called species just grow up.
Conversely, if the food becomes scarce in any category, the next generation, which apparently can be produced almost instantly, switches to a form which does have an adequate food supply.
The mice?
The mice weren't here when we got here. They were born of the squirrel-sized omnivora.
And the rats?
Born of the next larger size. After all, we are environment, too, and they adapt to environment.
Let me get this straight. The mutation...
On Earth, it would be mutation. Here, it's merely normal evolution. These animals have no genes or chromosomes. I don't know how they pass down heredity, but they react to external conditions far faster than anything we've ever encountered.
Then we'll never be free from pests unless, of course, we rid the planet of all animal life.
Yeah, you mean with radioactive dust? That won't work. They've survived worse.
Oh, maybe we could leave the planet. Leave it to the animals. I could exercise authority under Clause 364.
It's too late for that.
What do you mean?
We sent back the specimen ship. The animals are on Earth, too.
But those specimens were in cages.
Yes, but the next generation would be small enough to get out through the bars. They'll be running free in the cargoes of the spaceships. They'll land on Earth, and the first thing you know, a new mutation of rats will appear. They won't have any reason to connect it with the specimens from Glade.
They won't be able to vermin-proof every building on Earth.
No, we've got to stay here. We've got to study the animals here and find out how to beat them. If we can.
Next tape, L plus 83. Place, field outpost. Quartermaster Crone, Hafner, and myself.
I saw it, Mr. Hafner. I saw it.
Are you sure?
There. You see that tree? No, no, the big one.
The white flowers?
That's the one. I saw it behind there.
Can you describe it?
Well, I didn't get a good... That's it. That's what I heard.
It sounds like a tiger. I've heard them like that in India.
You watch. Right by that tree.
Look out, look out. It's heading this way.
Give me that rifle. Hurry up. Shoot. Shoot. Try again. I've got it. Come on. Come on, let's take a look.
Now look out. Might be still alive.
No, no, I hit it square with that second charge. What in the devil is it?
It's a good 8 feet long. What do you make of it, Marin?
Well, except for the lack of markings, it closely resembles a tiger.
Look at those claws.
We chase the rats out of the warehouse, they go to the fields. We hunt them down in the fields with dogs, and they breed tigers.
Well, that's easier than rats. We can shoot tigers.
Wait a minute. We've been here less than 3 months, Marin. The dogs have been in the fields only 2. And that tiger's mature. How do you account for that?
I'm not sure, Mr. Hafner, but I imagine if the survival factor is high, the young don't ever have to be young.
What?
They can be born as fully functioning adults.
Development report. Mice under control. Field rats under control by terriers. Tiger-like animals under control with searchlight and rifle. Additional complication. The original animal developed an appetite for electrical insulation. There is no protection except to keep the power on at all times. The last tiger-like animal was seen at L plus 130. After that, the attack ceased. By L plus 2 years, the animal seemed to have been controlled in all its forms. However, 3 months before the next colonists were due, a new animal was detected. Food was missing from the fields. Dogs were useless. The animals seemed to roam the fields and the dogs did not attack. Patrols were unable to find the animal. Tape L plus 2 years. Hafner, Engineer Tully, and myself.
Now, here's the way I'm rigging it up, Mr. Hafner. Whatever it is, it spotted the photoelectric cell rig. So I've worked up an alarm that reacts to body radiation.
You're sure the animal won't spot that?
Well, I'm burying it in the field. Then we'll move the visible alarms to another field.
All right, Tully. As soon as the alarm goes off, notify Mr. Marin and me. Do you understand?
Yes, sir. Just as soon as the alarm goes off.
L2 plus 15. Radiation alarm sounded. Place, field station, Hafner, and myself.
Look out where you're walking, Marin. We don't want to scare it away.
Well, there are dogs in that field, aren't there?
Well, they were supposed to be, but they didn't bark. Quiet.
There it is. See?
See? Huh? It's in between the rows.
Look out. Look out. Give me a clear shot.
No, wait a minute. Don't shoot.
Look, Marin, I'm the executive here. I say it's dangerous.
Dangerous? That's why you can't shoot. It's more dangerous than you know.
Quiet, quiet. It'll hear you.
We're downwind. Now, listen, Hafner. This is important.
I don't want any lecture now, Marin. I don't want to lose the shot.
You've got to listen. That animal could evolve mice. We stopped mice and it brought rats. We turned back the rat and provided the tiger.
All right, we stopped the tiger.
Not really. There was another animal being formed. The one that's in that field now. It took the animal 2 years to create it. How, I don't know. 1,000,000 years were required to evolve it on Earth.
He's moving away. Marin, I'm going to shoot.
Don't shoot. We can't destroy the animal. It's on the Earth now and on other planets. We've never even been able to get rid of our own rats. How can we exterminate this animal?
All the more reason to start now. Get down and give me a clear shot.
Listen. Are their rats better than ours? Will their beasts win or ours be stronger? Or will the two make peace, unite, and interbreed? It's not impossible. This animal could do it if interbreeding had a high survival factor. Don't you see? After the tiger, they bred this thing. If we shoot it down, what'll come next? Look at it, standing erect. Opposable thumbs, binocular vision, a large brain capacity. This one I think we can compete with. It's the one after this that I don't want to face.
Marin. Marin, it must hear us. It's looking this way.
Look at it, Hafner. He's holding his hands up to show us he's got no weapon. Drop your rifle.
Are you sure?
Drop your rifle. He's coming this way.
He's got one of those white blossoms in his hand.
Yes. Must be a sign of peace.
Wait. It looks almost like a man. I wonder what's inside that body.
I wonder what's inside that head.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Verbal Agreement by Arthur Sellings, the story of an unsuccessful poet who was forced to ask what it was the aliens could want that was half as precious as the skins they wouldn't sell. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Student Body, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by F.L. Wallace and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were John Raby, Bob Hastings, Kate Wilkinson, James Stevens, Charles Carruth, and Merrill E. Joels. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Bob Maurer and is an NBC Radio Network production. Suppose you met a man in a tavern and he told you quite seriously that he wasn't a man at all, that he was the last Martian left alive. Well, that's what happens to a newspaper reporter next week when he is sent out on what appears to be a routine crank story. What happens next, though, is very far from routine, as the interview leads to a whole succession of astonishing events. The story is The Last Martian by Frederick Brown, next week on X-1. The Fisher Body Awards to Teenagers will be made tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 31st, 1956 on NBC. That was the first of two stories featured from author F.L. Wallace, who first had the Student Body story published in Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, of which X-1 culled many of its stories from. The next and final tale from Wallace would be heard on the series on August 1st, 1957, called End as a World.
They should have a good view from the White House.
No better than us right here.
What about Australia? Will they see it over there?
They'll see it all over.
Africa, too? And what about the Eskimos?
Doesn't matter whether they actually see it or not. It'll come to everyone at the same time.
Yeah, how about that? Everybody. Not just in this town, but all over. Wherever there are people and even where they're not.
You know what I keep thinking about?
What?
I keep thinking about the man who made the H-bomb. I bet he felt silly and spiteful blowing up an island. I mean, somebody might have wanted to live on it if he just left it there, you know?
Yeah, bet he'd feel pretty small with his old H-bomb after today. Pow. My mother's over at the church praying.
And what for?
She just said that's what she wanted to spend today doing, right up to the last minute.
Yeah, all the churches are holding prayer meetings.
The town board wanted to close up that carnival on Pearl Street. You know, the one with the cooch tent? They said it wasn't dignified for today.
They close it up?
Mm-mm. The manager said he had his license, and he didn't care if today was the day the world ended or not. He was putting on 5 shows right up till it happens.
Funny idea, those girls dancing, and then, whoom, it happens. And nobody to look at them anymore.
I can't understand people. Shows and lawns and cleaning the trash out of the cellar on a day like this, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, people get used to doing certain things.
Yeah, but today?
Even today. That's how people are, I guess. Just gotta keep on with what they're doing, even if it doesn't make any sense.
From August 1st, 1957, a few moments with the F.L. or Floyd Wallace story, End as a World, his second and final, adapted on the X-1 show. And that brings to a close this hour of science fiction on Tune 2 Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. It's been a pleasure.